Sopranos heads, welcome back to a Sopranos podcast.
The best Sopranos podcast.
The best Sopranos podcast. As always, the only game in town, the only one worth it, the only one that doesn't do stupid shit.
Yeah,
I think there's been like three new Sopranos podcasts since we started ours, and I thought we were late to the game.
Nah, I don't think that's correct. Actually,
I think that someone I went to college with does one.
What the fuck, Spells?
And
you gotta hit that in the bud, man.
Yeah, I mean I don't talk to them, but they were like, oh, we just went past like 10 million down or something. Like,
what?
I was like, no, you didn't. You definitely didn't. You have
10
like
million downloads.
You have like five likes.
You go to college with Steve Sharippa? Is that the podcast?
No. But you know, hey, and I don't think they like have as good of a work ethic as we do.
I'm not saying that's yeah.
I know.
That's a statement.
I know. Yeah, so
we churn this out, you know, we pump our entire lives into it. We consistently record every single week.
Yeah, hey, I say we've always been pretty good though.
We've been
pretty good. I mean, have we been doing it for almost a year or coming up on maybe a year, like in a couple months?
No, we've
a year and a half.
Doing well over a year. Yeah.
Oh, a year and a half. Yeah, I just did last year has just been, I've just erased it from my mind.
I can't imagine why.
A year and a half to 2 years to get to season 5, baby. Hey. Episode 1.
Season 5.
This is where it gets the fucking cooking. This is where all you little Soprano fans are like, oh, good. Give me fucking Robert Loggia. Give me fucking Steve Buscemi. Give me Frank Vincent.
Give me the guy who plays Angelo. Give me all the other guys.
Frankie Valli.
Frankie Valli. Hell yeah.
How green was my fucking Frankie Valli?
Nice. This is where the show finally gets good, you guys. We've been waiting a long time. But season 5 premiere, 2 Tonys. I do want to say, anybody who has questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to hear us talk about, you want to tell us to go fuck ourselves, tell us. We'll gladly read that and we'll have a prepared rebuttal for you. But send us some shit to talk about, guys. We want to hear your thoughts. So season 5, let's do like a little like pregame discussion here, because it was quite a stretch between Whitecaps and 2 Tonys. I think it actually ended up being a total of
year
like
and a half,
15 months, something like that. So not quite a year and a half.
Wow.
But it was this
but I think
aired.
We said the last step. I think we said like the we went an entire year in college without a season.
Yes. Well, our spring semester sophomore year was when this was airing. So
So just about
fall semester freshman year. So it was over a year. Yeah. But
insane.
But
I was graduating college.
Fucking old fogey.
What did it air? What March of
March 7th, 2004, and Whitecaps aired December 8th, 2002. So we had quite a wait back then. Like, I feel like now television seasons take this long. Game of Thrones, they had like a huge fucking, like 2 years. Like, I mean, that's Game of Thrones, but
The undertaking that show was like,
yes. But also, I think shows generally take their time. Network shows, but like
No, I agree. But this is don't know, 15
weren't
months.
Especially back then, it was very weird. Yeah,
weren't they holding out for like money or something, or was that an issue? Yeah.
They might have been, but I also originally, like back in like
that
when season 2
was
airing,
two. Yeah, yeah.
The contract was only for four seasons, and David Chase was saying, I'm done after season four.
Oh, right.
And then he eventually said, like, yeah, I think there's more stories. He didn't intend to end with Whitecaps. He knew they were coming back at that point. But like early on, he had only planned out for four seasons. So luckily, and then when they were like, we're doing season five, he was like, definitely not doing a season six. So like, yeah. We know.
And then he decided to do two season sixes instead.
Right. Yeah.
I remember the trailer for this, like posting, you know, like months in advance. And I vividly remember the bit from this episode of AJ, like jumping up from the drum set and knocking over the hi-hat.
Yeah.
Right,
like
you were like, oh, fuck.
Fuck, the house is under attack.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Little did we know. It was, but from, you know, from a bear. From
a giant bear.
From a bear.
I remember the poster for the season that Annie Leibovitz shot poster. Do you guys remember? It was like the cast on like a boat with what bridge was in the background? I don't even remember. Some bridge in the background, but like all the dead, the people who were killed off the show, their dead bodies were like in the mud around this like little raft.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Richie, Ralphie, Pussy, Gloria, like got me so pumped. And then of course to see Buscemi sitting on that boat with the rest of the cast was so cool.
I had like a magazine like fold out that like when you opened it, it played the Sopranos theme. Like they like the marketing
some money,
for
man.
The season.
Should have held on to that.
I think it's still. I don't know if it still plays. But I don't throw anything out.
I'm looking for the, you know, people who are listening. I was looking at the picture and I'm pretty sure that's the Pulaski Skyway, which is North Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have like the, of course, the
which is
the
in the opening too.
Yeah. Right. And they have the obligatory like flock of ducks or whatever flying off into the sunset.
Yeah.
Always teasing the ducks.
But I mean, maybe short of the finale, like I feel like there was nothing more hyped up than this season. Obviously, the amount of time off like contributed to that, but also just people were so excited that like Buscemi was going to be in this season as an actor.
Cast announcements were insane.
Yeah.
Also just the way Whitecaps left us, like,
yeah, exactly. Beginning a season with Tony and Carmela separated, which was such a departure.
And this season is like, it's almost like David Chase decided like, okay, so season four was criticized for perhaps being a little slow, a little light on the whackings. And I think, I'm pretty sure season five is the bloodiest season, has the highest body count. So it almost seems like this season is a bit in a response to the criticisms of last season. And of course, like the climax of this season is great. I mean, long-term parking and all due respect is pretty big 1-2 punch there. Let's get into the ep. What do you say, guys?
Let's do it. We didn't even get introduced by Joe. I mean,
oh yeah, we skipped right over that.
We're a little rusty. I was gonna make a great joke about my name being Trapper John, but I guess I'll have to.
There you go, you did it.
I mean, glad we circled back to get that in.
I mean, thank you.
Two Tonys,
or we could have been the two Tonys, Paul.
Tony, yes, you're right.
Just keep pitching more dumb jokes.
Let's keep stalling. Let's not talk. Okay. Written by David Chase and Terrence Winter, directed by Tim Van Patten. Season 5, episode 1, Two Tonys. This is the one where a bunch of New Jersey and New York mobsters are released from prison. Tony reaches out to Dr. Melfi, but not for therapy. A dinner in Atlantic City leaves one asshole waiter dead, and some New Jersey wildlife lurks around the Sopranos' home. And this time, boys, it ain't ducks. Okay, so it opens with Emmylou Harris's Heaven Only Knows. We get these shots. It's almost like a post-apocalyptic version of the Sopranos home. Leaves in the yard. The fucking grill is open. Pool is covered. So as we know, pool is like always like the analogy for the family. So when it's covered up, they're making a statement here. Family's in shambles. And of course, the traditional season opening shot of Tony shuffling down the driveway to pick up the Star Ledger is replaced by Meadow running over the Star Ledger in her like really noticeably not well kept up car. Do you guys notice that? It's like covered in an inch of dust and there's like dents all over it. So yeah. Fucking those little details to, because Meadow would absolutely not take care of her car and wash her car. Like,
yeah. Also shit, like, but... like she's parking in the city somewhere. It's probably just like sitting like
true. Yeah.
Fucking garage or something.
Right.
And we're to assume that Tony bought her that car. Right.
Of course. Yeah,
absolutely.
If he's been buying AJ all that shit, like, oh my, first of all, as somebody who owned a drum set as a child, $5,000 for a fucking drum set? What the fuck? I mean, that's like beyond professional. Like, it's a good touch because it's like, oh my God. Like, it's not like Tony like was like, I'm not paying that much. Like, you're going to get a starter set. Like, he got him like the top of the line, like fucking
right.
Best.
He's like, I'm going to get you the best drum set and you're going to love me and not your mother.
and clearly, you know, it made him sound great because he's, man.
Hey,
he's a regular jam. John.
Also, it's kind of, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he does sound not bad.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just sounds fucking terrible.
Oh, really? I don't know. I think for someone who probably has like no lessons, I don't know. I have no idea though. I'm not really paying.
That's true.
I was more paying attention to the convertible being down when it's like there are no leaves on the trees.
Right, right. Yeah, we see,
I wonder if she knows how to put it up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the opening shot, it's like clearly shows that it's autumn.
Right, right. I mean, you can probably still get away with it, but you know, I'm sure you're going to be cold.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man,
as someone who owns a convertible type car.
Yeah.
Big flex.
Spells, you always got to show off, man.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Dude, I know. I got to create this aura, you know, surrounding me in the listener's mind of right. Who I am.
Everybody's like, yep. Oh shit, he drives a convertible. Yeah, so she rolls up. They're heading to, she's picking up AJ for Sunday dinner, which is now at the Baccalieri residence. So in the show, actually, like almost as much time has passed since when we last saw them. And that was something that was kind of cool. Like a lot of shows end on cliffhangers and like pick up right where they left off the next season. But no, like in Sopranos world, you know, as time goes on in our world, so it does for the characters. Janice and Bobby are married now, mm-hmm. Which they get in with a little exposition about Janice lost her ring in the garbage or something like that. Typical Janice.
It's in that roast. Someone's eating it.
Yeah. Definitely in the roast.
Yeah, little Bobby's eating it, but he's not even noticing. He's just fucking wolfing down shit.
Ooh,
but
ring tastes good.
Delicious ring. Yeah, and so Tony's got the TV on, and this is where we're introduced to the class of 04. Bunch of mobsters who were jailed in the 80s finally getting released. We got Soprano Capo Regime, Feach Lamana, Robert Loggia, who we have heard about previously multiple times. I think seasons one and three, maybe season two and three, they mentioned Tony and Jackie Senior holding up Feach's card game. So he's a little bit of a legendary status. It was very exciting to see that he was actually going to be a character. We get Lupertazzi Consigliere, Angelo Greppi, played by Joe Santos. Hey guys, I came prepared. I knew who Angelo was.
Damn, dog.
Wow. He had worked with David Chase on Rockford Files. Then we get Phil Leotardo, of course. He was almost cast as Uncle Junior.
Yes.
Frank Vincent,
like, which bizarre to imagine.
Entirely different picture.
Yeah, definitely.
No. Failed if that happened.
Yeah. He got the right role. He got the right role that he was meant for.
And of course, Tony's cousin, Tony B, Tony Blundetto, Steve Buscemi.
Disturbing that Janice like super horny to like see the picture they use of him, and she's like,
yeah,
he was a fox, like she's all horned out for him. That's your fucking cousin.
A little bit of a red flag.
It's fucking weird.
You're Sopranos,
not for Janice, you know, not for her.
Yeah, I guess so.
True.
If he was around, she'd be doing coke with him in a bathroom somewhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. You could see them at a Rolling Stones concert together, fucking doing crank.
What are you doing to me?
Yeah, I gotta say I appreciate that they named him also Tony. I mean, obviously they're playing with some like thematic things with like, you know, different versions of Tony, what Tony Soprano could have been if things had gone differently for him. But also like all Italian families have like fucking 6 Tonys and 7 Christophers and
yeah.
Surprised are there any Michaels? There's no Michaels. Mike? There's no Mikes in Sopranos.
No.
Dropping the ball. Mike. Anyway,
Paul Meese. Anyway,
Mikey. There he is. Mikey. I knew it. Anyway, so yeah, let's talk about the mafia stuff this episode first, hell and then we'll get into like Paulie, Chris, and the bear and all that shit. So Feech, obviously, all that fucking horse shit. Feech obviously is out of jail. We first meet him at like a little lunch that Uncle Junior at Uncle Junior's. I guess he brought over some fucking like dandelions or some shit to prepare for Uncle Junior. But anyway, you know, off the jump, Feech is a hothead, screaming and snarling and telling him stories about, you know, how he beat up the biggest, blackest guy in jail. So, you know,
Uncle June seems thrilled that he's there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So like, we gotta have a dinner for this guy. Now we gotta.
Okay. I mean, I guess. Yeah. How would Uncle June like? What do you think is going through Uncle June's head? Is he like, oh, I'm not the oldest fuck in the family anymore?
I mean, also, but like Uncle June is so easily annoyed by people, and he's so fucking loud and obnoxious. Like right, you know, right. Like from back in the day. Uncle June probably fucking like kind of can't stand him.
yeah,
I'm sure.
I mean, and also like Junior, I feel like has always sort of been not the most popular guy in the family. You get that impression. Yeah, Johnny Boy for sure.
He was the charismatic one.
Yeah, but you hear stories about how Junior was like a creep from like later this season, Fran Feldstein and shit like that. Not that the guys would care that he's like creeping on a woman, but you know,
but he's definitely that impression. He's definitely like a weirdo.
Yeah, it's black sheep. So that's where we first meet Feech. He says he wants back in the business as long as he doesn't. And Tony says it's fine as long as he doesn't step on anybody's toes.
I'm Fred Astaire. One of my favorite lines in the whole series. Fucking great. His delivery is so good.
Well done.
It's you know, I'm sure we'll like get into it down the road about like his issues with his lines and like the fact
that
they had to cut him out early in the season. But that always breaks my heart because he's so fucking good. He's so good.
For sure.
Oh yeah.
It's a shame that his like line is going.
And then Angelo, we first meet Angelo. Everyone's always fucking eating on the show. They're having lunch on the golf course. With Johnny Sack and Carmine Sr. We find out that Angelo was like best buddies with Tony B in the can. Angelo, opposite of Feech, seems like super nice guy, just kind of wants to fade off into retirement. You know, he says as much later on. His
grandkids. Yeah, right.
What
always bothers me about this scene is that he doesn't know right away like who Tony B is, to who Tony Blundetto is. Like he's like, oh yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's that always bothers me.
I thought that was
me.
So strange. He's like, oh yeah, here. He's I loved him. He's like my best friend. I'm like, wait, Tony's cousin.
Yeah, I mean, but also like, does he know that he's actually Tony's cousin? They have different last names. It could be one of those things again where it's
never
like,
came up.
No, it probably came up, but you know, how often did he remind Angelo that, you know, Tony Soprano is my cousin, you know?
Right.
You know, he just knew he was part of the Jersey crew, you know?
Yeah.
Also, but I think it's like, it's the direction or the writing of that like moment.
You're right.
The reading of it sounds false.
It seems like he doesn't know like who he is at first. Like, he's like, oh, right. Like, no. You would know immediately. Like, also, they would have talked about Tony Soprano. Like,
right,
You know, like,
yeah. Also, yeah, you know, right. Like, what kind of fucking character is Angelo throughout the whole fucking show? Like, yeah. I mean, it's
kind of just a body. He's just a body. Like,
it seems like somebody
for them to whack.
Yeah, they wrote him just to kill him off.
Just to create that triangle power struggle. Really.
Right. And Golias makes like a good point. It's like, we see the dichotomy of like these two old timers who come out at the same time, and one wants to go, one wants to stay in the business.
And one's a hothead, and one's like more like doesn't remember who's related to who.
Well, yeah, and you think about like all the other characters released from jail, like they can't all just be pain in the asses to Tony, you know? So
right.
One guy remembers every single thing he did in prison every single day, and one guy forgets his best friend from prison.
Hey, okay, there you go. I mean, all right, now our brilliant character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Favorite.
Perfect.
Character.
Perfect.
Yes. So, and then we essentially say goodbye to Carmine Sr. This episode, because a little development, he has a stroke at that lunch. I always thought it was interesting that he's like, smells like burning hair. He's like, I smell cut grass. But then like later in the season, Valentina actually has her hair catch on fire, mm-hmm. which is like kind of like a weird foreshadow. Like, I mean, I don't think they knew that they were going to write that at this point, but just kind of like a strange little thing.
I mean, burning hair is like a classic, like I'm having a stroke or I'm about to have a stroke.
Right. Burning hair, burning toast.
I love Angelo. Like, get that egg salad out of there. It's a disgusting shot of Tony Lip on his back with his mouth open, full of chewed egg salad.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. This always struck me as like the way that John Ventimiglia is playing it. John Ventimiglia, God, fucking Johnny Sack.
Vincent Curatola.
Vincent Curatola. It always struck me that he is like playing it like he knows that Carmine is dying, and he's like trying to act like he doesn't. Like,
I didn't notice.
When he's like, I smell fresh cut grass.
Oh yeah.
It's almost like he's kind of like, he like can tell. That's the way it's always read to me is like, he can tell that Carmine is fucking passing away.
No, I didn't pick
that's,
up on
that. Maybe. Cause Tony kind of looks like, what are you talking about? Like kind of like concerned a little.
Yeah. I don't know. Possible. Listeners. How did you read that moment? Did Vince Curatola play that as though he was relishing the moment of his boss choking on some egg salad to death?
Did Johnny Sack somehow give him a stroke?
Right.
Shot him with something that would initiate a stroke.
What did he put in that egg salad? It might not have been mayo.
Fuck, we never found out.
I don't know. I'm not saying either way. I'm just, it's interesting, you know? It's interesting.
I mean, there's medicine out there that like stops a stroke or or reverses a stroke. I forget what it exactly does. So maybe, you know, he just created the antithesis of that.
Yeah, but also, I mean, Carmine Sr. doesn't look like a guy who would not have a stroke. So,
That's true. But yeah, I think Johnny Sack,
just on his own,
Johnny Sack definitely shot him with stroke serum that he made his lab.
Yep. In the egg salad, in place of the gherkins,
he's smoking in the hospital like chapel or whatever. Like, I wonder if I could smoke. Yeah, what the answer is fucking no.
Yeah. What?
Johnny, come on. But this is sort of the watershed moment for the rest of the season. This sort of sets up the big dichotomy between, you know, Johnny is the one who is on the phone next to little Carmine who went back down to Florida. See him in the pool. Pool means Florida, guys. He's down in Florida and gets the call. You know, he's like, I'm coming back up. And this is where the power struggle ensues, you know, with Carmine Sr. out. Johnny obviously wants to vie for that top spot. And little Carmine, at the insistence of others, such as Frankie Valli's Rusty Melio, thinks that little Carmine should take the boss's chair.
The hair appearance.
Yes. But so, yeah, we get that scene at the hospital where Johnny reminds Tony, you know, he hasn't forgotten about Tony leaving him in the lurch last season with where they were going to whack Carmine Sr. You know, I love Tony's line. Like, what do you want, John? Oh, a fucking Whitman sampler?
Yeah.
Those are
great.
Good, those
great throwback. Great yeah. throwback to the Whitman sampler. I brought him a Whitman's. That's obviously that's the universal, you know, gift of, I hope you feel better.
I hope you feel better about Valentine's murdering Day. Somebody with you. Yeah. I mean, so, and really like this is from here, it's just complete deterioration of Johnny and Tony's relationship. Like, do you think that there's any way at this point, like there's anything Tony could have done at this point to improve relationships going forward, or is this just doomed from the start?
I guess, like, outside of killing Carmine Jr., like, no.
Right, but would that be smart for him, you know? So,
no. Oh, you mean things like realistic things that he could have done? No. There's nothing. And, like, we said, like, last season, I think, like, Tony absolutely did the right thing.
Yeah.
Right.
He made the right choice in the long run. It's the right choice.
He even says it to Chris at some point where he's like, if Johnny and little Carmine fight, you know, they go to the mattresses, we pick up the pieces from the fallout, you know, we could, you know, it could be to our benefit. So staying neutral, as neutral as possible, seems to be the only path forward here. Yeah. But Tony B has some other thoughts about that in a few episodes. So, And that's pretty much where we left the mafia stuff. Let's move on to Tony and Melfi rekindling some romance, or not.
Ooh, rekindling, will they, trying won't to kindle. They with these two?
Yeah. Yo, not to be a dog, but she looks beautiful in this episode.
She's looking fine.
I think they went out of their way to make her look extra, you know, more done up, like her makeup and stuff, more than they.
Not a hard thing to do. With Lorraine,
you mean the right? scene where she was naked, Dave?
No, not that scene. No, I mean like when he first calls her, even when she's in her office, she's a little more done up, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she's living a relatively stress free life without Tony as a patient now. She's not having to go on the lam and shit. So Tony gets reminded of her when he's still dating Valentina, when they have the Prince of Tides on in the background. Which, have you guys seen that? I've never seen it.
I've never seen it either.
Are you kidding me? My father loves Barbara Streisand. Of course, I've seen.
Oh well.
I thought you say he loves Nolte.
No, my dad always turns it on. He goes, "Oh, I love Streisand."
Nice.
Shut up.
I love Streisand.
Tony recognizes something in the relationship between the patient and the therapist, and that sort of makes him, I guess, reminisce about Melfi a bit. And also,
it's a good touch.
Right. He seems a little annoyed with Valentina. And so he's probably thinking, like, you know, I know my wife, my guma's annoying the shit out of me. And then he's thinking of Dr. Melfi, right? So that sort of gets him into the headspace to, I'm going to give her a call. And he does. And he tells her that he's separated from Carmela. He tries to set up a date for the two of them. She declines, obviously. She feels unprofessional to date a former patient. Completely reasonable. But then...
I'd say so.
Things get a little interesting because we see a little sexy scene between the two characters, and you think it's one of Tony's dreams, the horn dog, and then it's Jennifer Melfi's.
Yeah,
she's doing a little nighttime dreaming, Tony Soprano.
is that funny, Joe?
She's doing a little nighttime dreaming.
I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, man. not daydreaming.
Do you think that's her naked?
No.
It might be.
I don't know.
She's been topless and stuff before, hasn't she?
Oh, yeah. It's probably from the front. But
I mean,
like,
from the back. From the back. Oh. Like, that's got to be a butt.
You don't know. We don't know if that's what they did with Carmela, too, or that's rumored that they did that, too.
Right.
Oh, with her ass?
Yeah. I'm not trying to be pervy or lecherous. I'm just trying to you know, I'm just trying to ask the question, who did she actually do it, or was there
from a filmmaking perspective?
Right.
Yeah.
It's possible she did.
Sure, it's possible. It's
possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would bet on no. I mean,
it's HBO. They had to fill a tits quota.
So. Yeah, sure.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so after this dream, I think we see her in the therapy session with Kupferberg, talking about her initial attraction to Tony, you know, powerful alpha male. Kupferberg's like, maybe it's the Italian thing. Like, what do you guys think is going on here? Is she actually attracted to Tony? Is this like just a, think she is?
Yeah, I think so.
She says so much that she was at first, you know?
Right. And then, but then she's like, oh, but then the year after year, I saw the ugliness and heard the ugliness and this and that. Like,
hey, I'm still attracted to people that I think are fucking wretched human beings.
I think she is attracted. I think she definitely is attracted to him. I mean, she tells him too that she is. I think like her, you know, her better judgment obviously wins in that, like, she's never going to ever entertain those thoughts.
The show would be, it's one of those things where, I mean, we talked about it last week with like, if Tony had hit Carmella, like the show would just change forever. Like that would just not. Like if Melfi and Tony dated, even for a few episodes, it would just ruin. Because she's the one character who puts like her convictions over like her impulses in the entire show.
Right.
And then to have her go against that would just suck. And ruin her character.
But I think from a writing standpoint, I think making her attracted to him makes it the most
more believable. Interesting.
I also think the most believable, like I agree. You know, we're not therapists, but I would imagine like there like have to be
some transference.
Just like patients get attracted to their therapists. Like you would imagine that therapists like have some sort of attraction to some of their patients because they're spilling their guts to you and you see like layers of them. And also like, we're just naturally like attracted to fucking different people. It just happens, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's believable. But I'm glad she doesn't act on it.
It makes her seem more human. It makes her seem more human that she like does have attraction to him.
Totally. Cause sometimes she's, you know, she's got to be in robot mode and in the therapist chair, but you know, we do see like the real moments from her and the real side to her. So yeah, I mean, it's good writing, but I'm glad they didn't go there.
I would have liked them to like have her just like rub one out to like a news report of him.
Yeah.
You know, that would have just made me like really then believe, oh yeah, she definitely likes
him. Hey, I smell a Johnny the Nut on the horizon.
I'll pitch him the idea. I don't know. He usually likes to like work alone, work from his own his own twisted mind.
He doesn't take pitches. Yeah, that's fine.
But you know, we'll see.
Perhaps organically, like that'll just pop up for him. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, he does confront her. You know, he shows up a couple times at her office, but in the final, towards the end of the show, you know, he buys her cruise tickets.
Just insane.
Like that's going to change anything. And
where are you going? I'm going on a two week cruise with my therapist.
Right. If she's not going to get coffee with you, she's not going to go on a fucking boat with you, Tony. I'm sorry.
Right.
He pretty much forces her into being a little blatantly honest with him. You know, he's like, if you don't like the cut of my jib, whatever, that's fine. Just tell me what it is. And she has to tell him, you know, I don't like your values. I don't like your morals. You're not respectful of women. You're not respectful of people. You're violent, you know, this and that. And Tony like immediately goes to calling her a cunt. So does not work out well. And I think that moment sort of,
what a charmer.
Puts into focus a little bit, like how Tony has like sort of devolved or regressed into like, because it always came off as very childish to me. Like, oh, you're rejecting me? Okay, well, you're a fucking cunt. And you know, since his divorce from Carmella, I think he's regressed. But also, could you picture Tony, season one Tony, ever reacting to Melfi that way?
No.
I mean, I couldn't. And I think it just snaps into focus where Tony is at the beginning of this season, you know?
I mean, he's always just like been, he's always a baby when he doesn't get what he wants, especially from women.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not used to that. And he's wanted Melfi a long time. So Tony just does not have the tools in his toolbox to deal with this sort of rejection.
Well, we see it again, like down the road with like Juliana Skiff. He like sells like fucking expensive property to try to like win her over. he'll do anything when like women sort of play hard to get with him, which is pretty rare for him.
Right. And then of course his immediate reaction is he needs to go somewhere where he feels, you know, needed and useful. So he goes to deal with the bear problem. Let's talk about the bear problem. Coming around and Carmella and AJ and in that whole storyline here. Obviously, and this was actually ripped from the headlines. I don't know if you guys knew that, but like there were actually around this time, there were actually like black bears, Eastern black bears, like in Northern Jersey, like terrorizing fucking pets and people and shit and garbage cans and all that shit. So isn't that yard fenced in though? Am I wrong? Wouldn't they have a fence around that fucking yard?
What?
The Sopranos' backyard. How's this bear? Oh. Is it hopping the fence?
It doesn't seem like they have a fence, but
maybe they don't.
You know, because if you, I mean, I lived in a house.
There's a fence like, between Cusimano's house.
Yes.
There's a fence. There's a fence, not in the not on the side. There is. But if your backyard goes up to the woods, you're not putting a fence there.
Yeah, true.
That's how I grew up like that.
Oh yeah, and that's how Patsy came and pissed in the pool.
Yeah,
oh, right.
Didn't see him jump the fence. Okay,
yeah. Tony does like you know do that later on in this season. Walk.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, well at the very end of the season,
right?
And that's sort of like the whole analogy. What do you think they're trying to? Because it's obvious that. The bear sort of in a way represents Tony, like this like looming, large, ominous sort of threat that is sometimes there, sometimes not. You don't really know how to deal with it. Am I reading that right? Like, what do you guys think of the bear and why they inserted it?
The bear, why they inserted it?
Yeah, like, you know, besides just an excuse to have Tony come over to the house, like, because it comes back throughout the season. And obviously the season is bookended with, you know, there's that final shot after Tony, in all due respect, after Tony runs away from Johnny Sack getting
I think
nabbed by the FBI.
I think that's why they did it.
To
create like that sort of metaphor.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what it really means.
I'm trying to articulate what it could be. You know, just Tony sort of looming around the house this season and wanting to get back in and, you know.
And then he eventually does, like, like he's a wild animal from the woods.
Right, right.
I don't know. He's the wild animal that, like, can come back.
Right.
Always gets his way.
You know, never gets caught by the authorities. Never gets caught.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
But also like kind of, he keeps the family on eggshells, you know, like he's like moody and he has like a negative effect on the family a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
and just the sense of danger and the sense of danger that he presents to the family.
Right. 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 Sure. He's like a fucking wild bear.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, that's basically the whole thing there. They'd never catch the bear. Tony, at the end, after he calls Melfi a cunt, goes there. I do love that he sends Benny Fazio to, like, watch over the house while he's not there. And Carmella, like, offers him the AK-47.
Yeah, yeah.
And when they open like the little hidden compartment thing, there's a fucking grenade in there.
Yeah.
Insane.
It's so insane.
I mean, you wanted for that grenade to come back, but yeah. Like, yeah. When the fuck would they use a grenade?
Right.
Anyway.
Marco Polo. Tony. Marco Polo. They could, like, you know, throw
it in the pool.
Some pool game.
Yeah, here's a fucking metaphor for the pool. Throw a fucking grenade in there. And ultimately Tony ends up sitting and guarding the house. And there's that like beloved shot of Tony smoking the cigar. I mean, kind of silhouetted.
Iconic.
Yes. And there's one storyline we missed, Polly Christopher, which is a classic. You know, it's always the show is always great when they put these two against each other. And of course they kick it off with them reminiscing in the Bing about the whole fucking Russian debacle. They end up getting into a fight about it. It seemed a little bit like fan service at the time. I mean, at the time, I thought like, oh, maybe they are introducing the Russian. They're like, they want us to remember the Russian. Maybe he's coming back.
I think it was definitely introduced to be. Definitely introduced to be a tease.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's that. And I think it's also like, it was just like a natural way to start off the storyline of Polly and Chris button heads. But also like, I love the little, it's definitely a jab at the viewers who would not shut the fuck up about the Russian, where the Russian is for 3 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Cause Patsy, I think, asks like, well, what happened to the Russian guy? And Paulie's like, who the fuck cares? You
know? Yeah.
Right.
That was definitely directed at the audience.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so they get into a tiff about who was responsible for that. It's definitely Paulie, but doesn't matter. You know, Chris is beginning to resent this custom that the mob has of like low man on the totem pole picking up the bill at all these like expensive restaurants, huge meals. And he thinks that Polly should pay, and he actually forces Polly to pay at one of the meals. And I also love the line in that when they're talking about dinosaurs, he's like, you know, that's why, you know, bears, you know, they had their time, humans had our time. That's why there's no more dinosaurs. Wasn't it a meteor? They're all meat eaters.
Meteor.
Also not true that they were all meat eaters, but
yeah.
Paulie.
Yeah, right.
No fuck about dinosaurs. I guess.
Smart guy.
Yes. So then, obviously, Paulie complains to Tony about Christopher having him pick up the bill. Tony calls Chris in. This is one of my favorite like little throwaway lines when Chris is like, this is about the Easter baskets.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what that is, and I don't want to know.
Yeah, that is a great line.
The fuck could the Easter... Is the mob stealing trucks of Easter baskets? What is going on? And why would Chris think he was in trouble with Tony for that? So... I wish we could fill in the blank there.
There's got to be some connection. Easter baskets, Joey Peeps, you know.
Ah, Peeps, yes.
Probably this is a Peeps product placement that they're
very allegorical the long
game with.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hit that Peeps truck.
So then they go down to Atlantic City. Big meal. Paulie starts trying to run up the tab on purpose just to fuck with Chris. Of course, they get into an argument. They were outside after the meal. The waiter follows up with them about a $20 tip on a $1,200 bill, which he absolutely should.
Insane. Yeah.
And he ends up getting a brick to the back of the fucking skull and having a seizure. And
I looked up where that parking lot was because I was interested, and it's actually the parking lot of where the Crazy Horse is supposed to be. It's that parking lot. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Why were you interested in that parking lot?
Because I was like, because they had the restaurant name outside, and art department did a great job making it look real out there. But
Zansky,
I was like,
was Zansky still on?
Yeah. Oh, it was Zansky, I think.
Full run.
I was curious if it was a real restaurant, but no, it's just they must have arted the side of you know what was supposed to be the Crazy Horse. So
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
you know, when he's having a seizure on the ground, they decide to cut their losses and just fucking kill the guy.
I love that they react like he must have some medical problem. Like they didn't just fucking hit him in the back of the skull with a brick. Like,
but they have medication, these assholes.
Yeah,
3 seconds ago, you threw a brick into the back of his head, very extremely hard. Anyway, so they make off, and you know, hey, silver lining, guys. That guy had to die for no reason, but not really for no reason. It was so Paulie and Christopher could pretend to like each other again.
Hey, there we go.
So that was good.
Yeah. That was a like funny shot that like they, I don't know, just like, I'm sorry too. And Chris just goes back to reading in his apartment.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Sorry, classic kid.
Hey, we were being a bunch of idiots, you know.
I don't even remember what we were fighting about. I mean,
I mean, at least no one got hurt.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's anything else about the app? What did I miss? Anything? We got any come to Doves lines or what?
Come to Doves lines. I don't know.
I mean, me, I'm first. There is that's like an all timer for me.
Oh, yeah.
Also, little Paulie going, I wonder if I could use the WC. That's always made me laugh.
Like this they were guy, still trying to figure out Lil Paulie's voice.
Yeah, this guy says the WC. Like what? Like maybe like he just like heard that recently, and like he's like trying to.
Yeah, you heard that from Feech.
Carmella. Yeah, he heard it from Feech. He like wants Carmella to think he's like really classy.
We are, aren't we, introduced to Matthew Weiner? Because this is also like the first season he wrote on, right?
Yeah.
First
Yeah. And he got the job because David Chase read the pilot for Mad Men.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Which you know, got rejected at every whatever network.
And he pitched it to HBO, right? And HBO was like, nope.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good job, HBO. Good job.
Yeah.
Well done. Yeah, can't he played
the,
Matthew
can't
Weiner.
Can't have all the great shows, I guess. Can't have all the great ones.
He played the mob guy or the mob like analyst or whatever.
Journalist.
On TV in the opening scene.
Always great. Always great having like the like Herb like fucking
writers going.
Class of 04. It's gonna be a great year for mob journalists. Mob journalists.
Okay.
All right.
We should have had him whacked.
Yeah. I do love that they cut to Tony like watching and he's just like, what the fuck?
Give me a fucking break. Yeah.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Cool. Well, should we move on to fucking internet?
Fucking internet.
Let's do it. Fucking internet.
Let's not too much this week. This one from user Jukebox Hero on Reddit.
Oh.
If the waiter hadn't interrupted the escalating argument between Chris and Paulie, what would have happened? What do you guys think? Because I believe Paulie was actually lunging for Chris's throat in that moment. Do you think this would have been the moment where it would have come to blows and perhaps been fatal?
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I think it would have come to blows. I don't know if it would have been fatal, but he was definitely about to like, you know, start some shit.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, Paulie was coming for Chris, and I want to say Chris would probably win that physical altercation. Maybe possibly,
but yeah, Paulie's pretty fucking. Paulie can handle himself.
Yeah, he's pretty. He works out where Chris doesn't. They, you know, he does drugs.
They always like. They always like often like throughout the series like point out that like Paulie's like still kind of got it. You know, for an old guy. You know.
Yeah, I mean, we see him lifting weights and stuff.
Yeah,
once in a while. Yeah. But Chris too, when he's clean. I feel like we see Chris like lifting weights or whatever.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would, you know, they would have been evenly matched.
But either way, Chris would have been in deep shit for putting his hands on a captain, I guess. Or wait, is Chris a captain at this point? But he's still like the most freshman. He's not a captain, right?
No, he's not a captain.
Yeah, okay.
No.
He's a made man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Chris would have been in deep shit. This whole, it would have been a whole fucking thing. And, you know, not good for Jersey.
It is funny that like it gets resolved and like Tony will never know that they fucking just killed this waiter. he just assumes that like it was like water under the bridge. They worked it out. Like
I don't want to know.
Right.
Don't tell me. That's
a different kind of Easter baskets Tony doesn't want to know about. this one from user variable 114. Something weird about two Tonys. Does anyone else find it weird that the title is referring to the two sides of Tony as referenced in his conversation with Melfi, but that the season it launches is about Tony and his relationship to his cousin Tony, the two Tonys? I'm sure you've all pondered that. I remember like thinking like, oh, two Tonys, Buscemi's playing Tony Blundetto. That's what this episode is about. And then he's not in the episode, right? Like we only see him in the picture. But so I remember thinking that was kind of weird.
Yeah, but there's also the line, like, there's two Tony Sopranos.
Right, right.
So, well, I always confuse this episode with the next episode.
With the next one.
I'm always like, two Tonys, that's when they throw a party for Tony Blundetto. And then I'm like,
Yeah. yeah.
Weird sort of, but hey, it works, I guess.
I think that's on purpose that they're saying, hey, there's two Tonys in this, you know, upcoming season, but there's also two Tonys Soprano.
According to Tony Soprano.
According to him.
Yeah. Yeah. There's basically one Tony Soprano and he's just all the way a douchebag. So,
Oh,
this one from user Lifeguard. Yeah. The ignored murder of the complaining server. How do we explain and accept that Paulie and Chris got away with murdering a server who had just served a table full of mob guys, spent lavishly, and most importantly, perhaps, didn't pay their bill? Paulie took the cash from the guy's body before they fled. Any reasonable investigation would make the people at the table the primary suspects and the events that actually occurred to be the most likely conclusion. He goes on to detail that. But I think that's a pretty good call.
That's the greatest. That's the greatest fucking internet we've had.
I feel like so many fucking internets are people like, how did he get away with the like that? Just killing so and so. This is the most blatant one. Like this is.
I mean, they're all together. They're in public.
I'm trying to think in my head. I'm trying to think in my head how I could justify it, like being swept under the rug or not being investigated. But
there's absolutely a camera. Has to be a camera in that fucking parking lot.
In 2004. You don't think so? 2004. I don't know.
Maybe.
2020. But
it's not 1984. Like I mean.
There wasn't. This is pre-iPhone. There wasn't like as much stuff like that around.
It did seem like an upscale restaurant. I mean, the waiter is in like a tux, so there was probably some sort of surveillance. But you know,
have you ever walked the streets of Atlantic City?
No,
I haven't.
Have not.
Yeah, no one gives a fuck. Like no one cares about, especially in 2004. It's probably still to this day. I wouldn't. There's some areas that you can't walk.
But even still, even without a camera, suspect.
The biggest point is like the fact that there's this fucking table full of obvious mobsters eating.
Right.
And
right. Well,
all of a sudden their waiter is dead. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Lifeguard went on to write, you know, you have to assume the Sopranos had some sort of connection in the police department or at the restaurant to somehow squash the investigation.
Yeah, probably knew like the manager of the restaurant.
Except that Paulie says specifically that nobody knew that they were down there. So, I don't know. Ultimately, we're not making a fucking crime procedural here. You know, this is not the show.
Yeah.
I mean, good call, lifeguard.
Yeah, you're right.
Let's see. This one from user Ghost of Bohemia. Two questions about the two Tonys. Number one, AJ laments the fact that Janice is preparing canned clam chowder. Growing up in Jersey, I don't remember too many people making or eating clam chowder. Is it safe to assume AJ is referring to Manhattan clam chowder as opposed to, say, New England clam chowder?
Does he say canned? Does he
say canned? Canned clam chowder.
Yeah. I thought he said pan, like she cooked it in a pan.
Oh no, it said canned clam chowder.
Pan.
I don't know.
It's Janice, you know.
I think it's just showing that AJ is like a little spoiled. He's spoiled by Carmela's cooking, and
I'll tell
you what, used to canned clam chowder.
Canned clam chowder is not good.
Oh, I ate a fuck ton of it. The Progresso kind. Not the Campbell's. Never. The Campbell's, I would never, where you have to like add milk. That shit's disgusting.
No, but Progresso, I would never. I would never eat Campbell's or Progresso clam chowder. I'd rather get it from a place or make it myself.
And you're a soup guy.
So yeah, I understand. I understand, AJ. But having
clam chowder before you're having like a roast is kind of. I mean, it was probably Manhattan clam chowder if I had to guess, but. I can't imagine they were having New England clam chowder before, but it is Janice. She like doesn't really.
You can have clam chowder as like a soup before a meal.
Sure.
No. I'm saying that particular meal, that'd be kind of bizarre to like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Manhattan clam chowder would make the most sense. We can all agree Rhode Island clam chowder, disgusting.
Worst.
Yeah.
Worthless. Worthless.
Looks like fucking like soap water.
You know, and they're not having these. They're not going to fucking tell you this on other Sopranos podcasts. They're not going to have the clam chowder discussion.
Don't tell Lou DiMaggio and that crew up in Rhode Island.
Said that. You know, why wouldn't you can have clam chowder. Here's some good clam chowder, Outback Steakhouse. And that's a clam chowder you would have. Yeah. You would have true before a steak.
That's true. Sure. Yeah. Okay, that's why not? True. All right.
Man, I want
to listeners, tell us where you've had your favorite clam chowder. Anyway, Ghost of Bohemia asked a second question, but it's equally worthless. So we'll move on. This one from user Curtis 64. Something I noticed in episode 2 Tonys. Tony's with Valentina when he has to get going. She asks, "You're leaving?" Tony says he's got an international call. I believe he says overseas call. A little bit later, Tony and Carm are arguing and Furio gets brought up. Carm says that Tony's been calling over there trying to threaten the guy. Do you think the call that Tony has when he's with Valentina is him calling over to Italy to try and find and threaten Furio? What do you guys think?
Maybe, or it's just him trying to get the fuck out of there. Because he's
clearly, that's what I think, yeah.
Yeah, he's clearly over.
Probably just him trying to get the fuck out. It could be either one.
Yeah.
Could be either one.
I mean, how like hands-on do you imagine Tony is in overseeing this search for Furio and some sort of revenge for his wife just fantasizing about the man?
I do love that shit when
well, he did skip, he did, he just, skip out on
he
him.
Just,
yeah, he did.
He just had coffee and Tony goes, and now the coffee maker fucking sucks. You know, like love
how you like them apples. Yeah.
How do you like them apples?
How do you like them apples?
Now the coffee maker sucks.
Yeah, could be. But who knows? This final one.
Hey, who cares? Who gives
hey,
a fuck?
Hey. Who knows? Who cares? That's pretty much every answer to fucking internet.
You know, some of them.
You know, one might argue, who the fuck cares about this?
And this one we don't have to answer, but because we sort of touched on it, but I just wanted to read it to let us know. You know, we are thinking what the fans are thinking here. User Monster Mace. Are those really Melfi's tits in the two Tonys episode? Or is that a body double?
Yeah, we said it a little differently.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, yeah, I think it is.
Body double.
Not in the front. Because I don't think that shot, that would be weird. That would be like CGI'd or something.
Yeah.
Or something. It would be like
CGI'd.
I don't
possibly.
Yeah, those were Livia's tits, actually.
Gross. All right. Well,
look, we know that that's what the fans want to talk about, and you know, happy to oblige.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Without being, you know, let pervy.
Right. We talk about chowder.
Maybe we
talk
are.
About tits. We all the important shit you guys want to hear about.
Yeah, we talk about podcast. Like closed circuit fucking cameras, like outside of parking lots.
Yeah. 2004. Yeah. We really dissect these episodes. This is the hard hitting analysis that you all crave.
Right.
Sorry, you want the other fucking broad? You want the broad strokes? Go to the fucking Joe's College Friends podcast with 10 million fucking engagements. Whatever the.
You want to know what happened on fucking March 2004? What fucking bill was passed by the Senate? If Saxby Chambliss was elected to a fucking Senate seat or some shit? Yeah, you listen to like that other fucking garbage Sopranos podcast.
That's right.
Give us 5 stars.
Give us five stars.
Give the other ones 1 star or no stars.
1 star, no star. Yeah, give them no stars. And, you know, you can always fucking find us at osopranospod on Instagram and Twitter. Give us a follow. Email us at osopranospod@gmail.com. We love to hear what you're thinking, you know, all kinds of shit, you know, stuff you hate, stuff you love, stuff you're just thinking about. Even if it's not about Sopranos, just send us stuff that, you know, it's on your mind. You know, we're always open to just hear your thoughts. And yeah, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps. You can complain all you want, but give us 5 stars first. Until next week.
Oh! Ooh.